Taken away again by Sagan. He comes on, drops back for Radulov. Radulov goes across left side. They score! Klingberg wins it for Dallas at 17:02 of the overtime. The Stars knock the Predators out of the 2019 Stanley Cup playoffs.
In Smashville, I would say good morning, but I don't know that many people are having one. But we do thank you for joining us here on a Tuesday, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Nick Hale, Braden Gall, Derek Mason, Josh Upton in for the Constable Chase McCabe today as the Stars finish off the Nashville Predators last night in Dallas in overtime 2-1 as Dallas wins this series in six games, wrapping it up 4-2. Gentlemen, I know we will go through this whole season, this whole series, last night's game with a fine-tooth comb, but I just want to say one thing to start the show. I remember vividly, this popped into my head this morning as I'm coming in, David Poile last year, immediately after the end of the season to the Winnipeg Jets, said, "We lose in seven. We feel like if we ran the series back," and I'm using, you know, verbatim, this isn't verbatim, but just paraphrasing, you know, "we would feel good the way we are currently constructed to come back and play Winnipeg again, and, you know, we would probably win the series in seven," or something to that effect. If you ran this series back against Dallas, I don't think David Poile can make that claim today. I think it would be the same exact outcome.
I don't see how anyone would think it would be the outcome would change. If you ran it back and say the Predators, I mean, nothing's changed. Just ran each game back, nothing's changed. The Predators might lose in four, or they might lose in five, but they're not winning this series. And I do want to say one thing. They might have played their best game yesterday.
Oh, yeah.
They might have played their best. And what did I say? I said that Dallas feels, even if Nashville plays their best game, they can't beat us. Because this whole momentum thing, it's real. Confidence, it's real. They felt that they were the better team. They've built up the confidence. They built up the momentum. Even in a loss, they built it all up. They scored 5 goals back-to-back against a team that many consider a top 5 team in the NHL. Their confidence was riding high. Their momentum was going downhill, and there was nothing that was going to stop it. They didn't care if Nashville played their best game. As long as they didn't do anything crazy, they felt they were going to win. And what happened yesterday? Pekka had 49 saves. Watson played probably one of his best games of the series, and they still lost.
Well, Mikael Granlund played probably the best game of his series. Listen, that was, I agree with you, that was the best game of the series. And I think Dallas did make some mistakes. They made a lot of uncharacteristic mistakes because I saw 2-on-1 breakaways and 1-on-0 breakaways. Like that hasn't been a thing all series. So I thought the Predators played their best game. And I really hate predictions unless I get one exactly right. And then I'm going to come in and talk about how much I love predictions the next day. 2-1 in overtime with the Preds playing a great game is what I thought was going to happen yesterday. That is what happened. But they actually broke down the Dallas defense. They actually had chances to score. They actually gave themselves opportunities to win the game. Kyle Turris misses the backside of the net by a half a post. I mean, they had so many opportunities. Arvidsson with the breakaway on this 2-on-1. Everybody had opportunities. And Ben Bishop stopped everything. So, I don't want to get into an argument about if they played again. I think Nashville would have a chance to win the series if they played again. But this series is all that matters. And Dallas was the far better team, even though, you know, two of the games that they lost were close. And then, you know, they won two other games. So, we could go round and round and get wrapped around the axle on whether or not Dallas was the far superior team or just like the a little bit superior. They were the better team. And they won the series, and Nashville played its best game and looked its most desperate when it had to. It's hard to be a Preds fan and not look at that game and say, why did you not play like that every other night of the year?
It's too little too late.
And I'm not even talking about the playoff series. Mm-hmm. It's why didn't you play like those last 11 the whole series season? Now, I know you got a division championship out of the deal, and we'll step back and look at the big picture of the franchise a lot today. But there's also so to me, there's sort of like there's a game six view of it. There's the series view of it, and then there's like a season view of it. And some of this includes last postseason as well when they didn't play all that well. And that's kind of when it started. They tore into the playoffs last year, like 19-5-2 or something like that. Don't quote me on that number, but they had an unbelievable record down the stretch. And then they just sort of, you know,
fizzled out.
They just kind of played okay against Colorado, got punched in the face, and then Winnipeg, and then the whole regular season this year, and then, like, they have one series win in the last four playoff series. They have two division championships and one series win. They're losing games at home almost every time in the playoffs. If I'm a season ticket holder, I've paid a lot of money to watch them lose in the playoffs the last 2 years at home. So there's going to be a lot of questions on the show today.
We will take your calls all morning long. The phone number right here, 615-737-1025, 737-1025. It's your show this morning, your chance to react, air your grievances. You want to talk about Game 6, you want to talk about the series, the season, you want to look ahead. The floor is yours this morning, 737-1025.
Are we qualified? Like, and let's just ask ourselves this.
To fix the power play?
No.
I'm starting to think I could.
We might actually be qualified for that. Are we qualified to do therapy today? Like, are we qualified for that? Or is that like dangerous broadcasting practice?
Do we lay the callers on the couch and sit behind
right,
them?
Right, like we're going to be the therapy right. session for the Preds fans out
you
there.
You know what?
Are we qualified for that? Are we going to be straight shooters and tell them, hey, sorry, guys.
I think fans, I think you would be surprised. I think there are a lot of fans out there that realize that this team wasn't as good as what we wanted to believe.
Ooh, that was deep, but I agree with you.
And that the first round loss to Dallas, where it might have stung, but I think people kind of anticipated it, especially how the series was going. How they not necessarily ended the season, how they played the last 3 months of the season. I think people were hoping,
that they got far
and that they switched. But I think deep down, people, this is not the same team. And people started to slowly see it. This is not the same team that we saw 2 years ago. This is not the same team that won the President's Trophy. This is not the same team. And I think people started to realize it. So I don't know if we're going to have to talk people off the ledge, but I don't want to hear is Lavi getting fired. I don't want to hear that. He's not getting fired.
Yeah,
please don't even
you.
Go that damn way.
Yeah,
he's not getting fired because, honestly, he made some changes last night. And for all intents and purposes.
He made a lot of changes in the game.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It worked, but they were – Dallas was just a better team.
I think Rocco Grimaldi played with every human on the team.
Yossi even played with what? He played with a bunch of guys. It was like,
right.
You know, he did everything.
He was throwing everything on the wall.
Exactly. He did everything he possibly could do to try to get this series back here to Nashville. So, damn it, I don't want to hear no fire Laviolette. And I don't want to hear, oh, his message has worn thin. You don't know, so don't say it.
So I agree with you. I want to make sure I preface what I'm about to say with I agree with you. His five-year resume speaks for itself. Five trips to the postseason, trip to the Stanley Cup final, you know, two trips to the second round, a President's Trophy, two division championships. All that speaks for itself. There's no question that asking to call for the coach's head is a little irresponsible. I'm not even going to try to argue with that. I do think that that losing with two division championships and losing in the first round of the playoffs with a 100-point team and a 117-point team losing in the second round of the playoffs eventually falls on the head coach. Now, it doesn't mean that you should call for his head, but it doesn't mean that he's blameless in all of this. Like, he is the head coach. The other coach made adjustments, and they worked. Your adjustments didn't work. So, I game six, you made far more adjustments, and some of them worked. There is no room for blamelessness here, right? Like, everybody's guilty. Pekka played a brilliant series. He could have been better. Rocco Grimaldi, everybody is guilty.
But
you lose a first-round series as a division champion, everybody's guilty, and it all falls on the head coach eventually.
Isn't there something to be said, though, when you're sitting in front of your television and you're watching the game and you see the players' faces and you see the coach's face and you just sit there and you say to yourself, man, there's some nights where I feel like my head coach has more fire and wants it more than said player on the ice. Is there something to be said for that? Because I get that feeling at times, and I'm not calling out specific players because I don't think facial expressions and demonstrative personalities necessarily mean you want it more.
I mean, Yossi doesn't react to anything.
But, I watch Laviolette, and I know that guy breathes fire every day. And there are times when I watch this Predators team, and I say, why was there a lethargic effort? Why was that shift so lackadaisical? And I sit back and I say, Is this group entitled? Do they just believe they're going to waltz to the Stanley Cup final? Or are they, like, what is it? Like, there's something missing between, and we pull and we, you know, we split hairs with effort versus execution. But I watch this team and sometimes I wonder, like, you know, why do you have to wait to game six to play your best game and skate like your hair's on fire?
You're absolutely right. They should never get to this team, the collection of guys they have on this team, they should never get to a point where game seven, now we're playing out of desperation. It should be, this is the playoffs. Every game should be a desperation game, because if you lose more times than you win, you're going to be out. So why not play desperate? You know, if this was a one game elimination, wouldn't you play desperate? So why don't you think of it as a one game elimination every time you step out there on the ice in the playoffs? I can understand an 82 game season. I get that part. Getting yourself up every other night or every three nights. I get it. You know, some nights you just don't have it. But in the playoffs, damn it, have it every night. You have to.
Yeah. And I agree with both of you. I also think that's part of the coach's job.
Sure. So, what more can he say?
That's we don't know. You weren't there. I wasn't there. I'm just saying.
No, I'm saying, like, what more can, like.
I get it.
We expect Lobby to do, you know, to say what he's going to say.
Well, change what you're saying then. Because, again, there's two things have to exist. I do not think anyone should be talking about Peter Laviolette's job. I don't. I want to make sure everyone thinks I'm clear on this. But you don't get to just walk through this entire experience blameless. Mm-hmm. You don't, yeah, as the head, right. as the head coach of the hockey team that has gotten bounced when it shouldn't have 2 years in a row, mm-hmm. there is a conversation that has to be had on what needs to change. And you are not part of the change as far as your employment status goes. That's ridiculous. I agree with you, Derek. But don't tell me that not everything's on the table at this point.
No, you're right.
Everything's on the table, including his message or his style or his delivery. I don't know any of that stuff, whether or not I'm with you, Nick, that it's been well documented that he's changed his style and gotten better as a messaging coach. But this team didn't get it. So it may not be his fault that this team didn't get it, mm-hmm. but he needs to adjust to that and adapt to that, because everybody is part of this. They're all lumped in it together.
All right, your Preds calls when we come back. 615-737-1025. 737-1025. It's your show all morning long. You want to talk about the game, the series, the season, looking back, looking ahead. It's up to you, 737-1025. It's Morning Drive. We are live this morning from the Game Nashville studios, presented by Wholesaling Mount Juliet, here on ESPN, 102.5 The Game.
Peter, I know that we addressed the power play throughout the season, but to not score a power play goal in six games, why do you feel like the power play was never able to find a groove throughout the year?
I don't have that answer right now, Adam.
I guess on that front, Peter, do you feel like yourself, did you feel like you made the necessary tactical adjustments throughout the series to give your team the best chance to win?
Yeah, I mean, we moved everything. We moved the lines, we moved the power play, we made tweaks to what we were trying to do. In the end, it wasn't good enough.
Welcome back into Morning Drive. That was Adam Vingan from The Athletic grilling Peter Laviolette over the power play.
Does that not sound like a man whose team just lost in the first round? He sounds a little hoarse. He sounds a little drained. He sounds a little tired. He certainly doesn't want to answer questions about the power play, but those are two very good questions by Adam Vingan.
Mm-hmm. He's drained. He's all of the above.
Yeah. 0 for 4 on the power play last night, I believe either 0 for 15 or 16, but bottom line, 0 for in six games in the series and below 12% for the year when you combine regular season with the postseason.
There's not even like a reason for it.
And you try to figure out why this is happening, because I could see if they were a bad team and they didn't have players. That's like having a defense and you got a bunch of all-pro guys, but the red zone defense is just horrid. And you're trying to figure out, like, why is the red zone defense so bad? This team is so good.
Or they're a great defense and they can't ever get off the field on third down.
It's like
what?
why is this happening? And, I mean, I think it's all mental now with them. I truly think it's mental with them. There's nothing that Peter, you know, can say. I'm pretty sure he's said everything. Hell, there are, what, roughly over a million words in the English dictionary?
A million?
I don't think he can use any more words. He could probably go to another dictionary and try to pull out some words, but
Derek, this is how my stupid brain works. I am fascinated with how many words are in the English dictionary now. I want to know.
As of 2000, and it's probably even more. As of 2000, I think 10, when I checked, there were like over a million words. And I was like, I think like a million.
And aren't there 22,000?
Like, I think it's more now.
And aren't there like 15 times that amount in the Chinese dictionary? Or
yeah.
Something like
so
that?
So if you want to go to the Chinese dictionary and then everybody else's dictionary. I don't think he could have used
171,476 words.
But that was I'm going from the Oxford. What would they did it from know. The
but you
Harvard.
Can use, you this can use
Harvard.
This whatever is the first language Google, came out. Whatever language you would
Harvard,
like.
Harvard dictionary. Harvard
you,
said
you can translate Pred's power play into any language. The bottom line
say,
is it comes out it sucks.
How do you say power? How do you say bad power play?
Thank you,
Jerry. Like, three different languages. I'm going to figure that out. I'm going to figure it out. And I'm going to come back and I'm gonna let you guys know once we go to break and then come back. I'm going to give you at least two in two other languages what bad power play means. You know, how do you say bad power play in two other languages?
You should get a tattoo, dear.
Muy malo. This says, according to the Oxford English Dictionary, it contains full entries for 171,476 words, which means Lavi has tried 171,476 words.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely brutal.
That's why you never read, like, when you Google something, they got, like, 10 different things.
Yeah, I don't know if this is...
Because I'm thinking like 170-something words. Nah, that can't be true.
Yeah, right. Like, I say more than that in one
segment. I was going to say that, but I'll let you say
all right,
it.
Low-hanging fruit.
Exactly.
737-1025. Let's get the calls going. We started off with Corey in Nashville. First up this morning on Morning Drive, talking some Preds. What's up, Corey?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
This team needs an attitude or a culture shift, no question. I don't know if it means change in, you know, changes in the personnel. I think there's probably part of that. I think that is going to be what it takes to change the attitude. There's just no excuse for not playing hard. And we saw that they can play hard. And if they had played in the rest of the season like they played game six, we wouldn't be having this conversation. I guess what comes to my mind is that, you know, Peter Laviolette, he can only say so much. There comes a point where the players have to hold each other accountable. And it's great to say, you know, hey, we want to stay together and stuff, but you got to play like it too. And there comes a point where I think in this off season, whether it's Yossi or one of the other guys has to step up and say, hey, I love you guys, but this is unacceptable. You know, if you're not part of the solution, you're part of the problem and you're hurting us, and that's going to change. I remember, you know, when the Red Wings would go out, you know, first round every year, there was comes a point where mild-mannered, soft-spoken Steve Yzerman is talking to the press, and they say something like, you know, you don't seem very happy. And they go, and he goes, I'm tired of answering the same questions every year. It's ridiculous. And you could just tell there was that shift within the team that, you know, he wasn't going to accept that anymore. And I think that has to happen for the Predators.
Yeah, I agree with you, Corey. Appreciate the call. And I'll say this too. And like, we're going to certainly pick apart the Predators from a negative standpoint, and deservedly so. But I think you do have to tip your cap to Dallas. That series they put on defensively and with Bishop, the combination of the defense and the goalie was one of the best I've seen in recent memory.
Yeah, and
they were good.
And so Ben Bishop, the defense, and their top line. I mean, they all three of those things were better. I mean, Pekka was great. Ben Bishop was better. You know, Pred's defense was terrible normally. They have a great group of defensemen. Dallas was far better. And let's be very honest about the Jofa line. It got totally outplayed. It doesn't necessarily mean that the other line is better. But they got totally outplayed by Ben, Sagan, and Radulov. That group, and let's be honest, the second line for Dallas was pretty good too. They scored 7 goals, I think. So, you know, that top line for Dallas, just they absolutely produced when they had to. They took advantage of bad defense and turnovers by the Predators. I think defense and decision-making is at the top of the list of why the Predators lost this series. I thought their decision-making was atrocious, whether it's taking bad penalties, whether it's ill-advised passes in your own neutral zone, whether it's, you know, turnovers, whether it's, you know, losing your temper. I mean, whatever it is. I mean, and if you had number 4 on your sweater, like, you just weren't that good. Ryan Ellis, Matthias Ekholm, Mikael Granlund, like, if you had a 4 on your jersey, you weren't that good. So there's a lot of soul-searching, I'm assuming, on that plane flight home.
Well, I mean, he might be right as far as a culture shifting of the culture. There has to be something done in the off season that, because this team can't come back. And I know every year there's going to be change, you know, in sports with teams. The team never exactly comes back the same team. There might be one guy gone, two guys gone, three. You add a few people. But there needs to be something that changes this offseason. And when I say change, there needs to be something noticeable that happens with this team. Because you can't say, you know, we come back basically status quo. You can't come back status quo because for the last 2 years it hadn't worked.
Well, I'll tell you what. I know we've got Floyd coming up next, but at 6:45, I wrote down three things that I would do if I ran this operation. I'll give them to you, and one of them is going to be a point blank wiping out of one individual.
Well, and that may be true. I'm very excited to hear about that. I also think we don't want to miss too much of the forest through the trees. They are back to back division champions. So while something needs to change, I agree with you on that, Derek. It doesn't necessarily need to be wholesale. And I'm not saying nibbling around the edges. It could be a big move. I'm just saying the core nucleus of this team isn't going anywhere.
Yeah, you're not blowing anything
up.
The
core nucleus of this team isn't going anywhere. They're going to be together. And, oh, by the way, they've won back-to-back division titles. So even through all of the nonsense that we've talked about all season long with this team and into the playoffs, they still won the Central Division. So we still have to step back and say, all right, there's two division titles. They're not far away from being a really, really good team. They just haven't figured it out yet. And a President's Trophy is a pretty nice thing to look back on and say that we were the best team in the world during this 82-game regular season. And they were a game away from making it to the Western Conference Finals. So let's not overlook the actual accomplishment, even though we're in the moment saying, man, they're – you know, three for their last nine at home in playoff games, and they've lost three of their last four playoff series, and they are out early, especially this year. First-round exit is unacceptable for a division champion and a team that won the President's Trophy last year.
It's unacceptable when you look at it from the standpoint of, one, they were almost a 2-1 favorite to win the series, according to the experts.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, Dallas was a team, worst-scoring team in the Central Division, 28th in the NHL. And if I would have said at some point right before this series started, Dallas would win three straight games in this series, I think a lot of people would be like, yeah, I don't see that happening.
No, you're right. Because to everyone, you know, to everyone's, they just thought that getting Dallas would be the ideal situation.
Well,
for
we
the
did
Predators.
It. We thought it was better than St. Louis.
I'll put my hand up. Yeah. I was dead wrong about
they
that.
They would come in and they would play, and maybe Dallas won one game, but they're in the series in five and move on to play either Winnipeg or St. Louis.
Not that I don't think they would have lost to those two teams.
But,
too,
so. I mean, that's not the case. This is what I think is, and maybe I could be wrong. It seems like everybody else is getting a little bit better. And the Predators are just staying the same.
Well,
maybe I'm not.
I mean, Winnipeg did exactly what Nashville did. They took a step back in the regular season and got beat in the first round.
But what I'm saying is, Winnipeg, they're in the same sort of boat because they got the players, but they, for some reason, they just ran up against a really good St. Louis team. But if you look at Dallas is getting better. Colorado's getting better.
Yep.
The Blackhawks, you know, they didn't make it, but they're getting better.
I don't think they're getting better.
Yeah, you just said it.
They're not getting better. They got too much cap problems. But you're right about everybody else.
I think they're getting – they're eventually they're going to slowly – but I think everyone else is getting better.
Well, you got a young rookie goaltender from St. Louis.
They're right there. They haven't gotten any better. They hadn't gotten any worse. Well, maybe they have gotten a little worse. But everyone else is slowly just moving up the charts.
All right, coming up next, we will talk to Floyd Reese as we do each and every Tuesday. We'll certainly hit on a lot of Preds with him and also a little bit of the NFL draft, and then we'll get back to your reaction. Season over. Your call is coming up again at 6:45. If you want to climb in now, here's the number, 737-1025. We're back after this on Nashville's Best Sports Talk, ESPN 1025 The Game. 6:32, welcome back into Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Nick Braden, D. Mace, Josh Upton with you here on a Tuesday as we welcome in our man Floyd Reese, former Titans general manager, co-host of Jared and the GM. Floyd, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing great. How about you guys?
Well, we've been better. Preds series comes to a close. We'll get to the draft, but I do want to start with the Preds with you. From a front office perspective, I want to throw out the layout the last couple of years. So you look at this team. A couple of years ago, they lose in the Stanley Cup final. Then they lose in the second round. Now they lose in the first round. When you see a progressive decline in the postseason over 3 years, as a general manager, how hard is that to balance the quote, steady decline in the playoffs, at least from a round-by-round perspective, with how you evaluate the team moving forward and what type of adjustments and moves you need to make to get back to where you were 2 or 3 years ago?
Yeah, I think, I mean, that's always difficult because of, you know, all the potential reasons. I mean, it is a concern because you're kind of trending the wrong way after, you know, what you thought was adding a lot of better players. I mean, I think most people would say this team is better than the team of 2017, maybe 2018, and you expect more from them. You remember the beginning of the season. I mean, we were going to the finals. You know, that was kind of the assumption, and that's kind of what we expected. And to get, you know, out in the first round is a concern. You have to try to figure out why. You know, why are some of these good players not playing well? And you know, after you figure that out, then you probably have a course of action.
Now, Floyd, I must stick with the Predators real quick because it's going to tie into the Tennessee Titans. I look at these last 3 years, and it's scary how almost identical this team is to when we had our run for that 4 or 5 years. You know, we have this playoff run that people love, and we get to the Super Bowl, then we lose. Predators have this playoff run people love. They get to the Stanley Cup, and they lose in six. The next following year, you lose in the second round. We lose in the second round to a Baltimore Ravens team that ultimately goes and wins a Super Bowl. We were the best team in the National Football League. Nashville was the best team in hockey. And then the third year, you get put out in the first round. I think the third year, we end up going back to the AFC Championship game and losing to Oakland, or we lost in the second round to New England. But it's just scary how both teams they've taken the same like track after they've, you know, reached the highest of highs in pros, and it seems like they are slowly just getting put out of the playoffs. Things are not quite going their way, and it's when I look at it, it's just crazy how both teams are. It seems like identical. Their runs have been identical.
And I think the biggest concern I have looking at it and having gone through, you know, what you just described is, okay, what happens now with the cap? You know, we've got some players that are highly paid that maybe aren't playing up to par, and yet, you know, because of the contract and the structure of the contract, the way the NHL does it, I mean, there's not a great deal you can do. You know, a guy signs a 6-year contract and doesn't play well, you've still got him. You know, now you could maybe trade him, but, you know, if you picked him in the first round or you traded a first round for him, and then you turn around and you try to trade him now after this season with that contract, I mean, you end up with, you know, who knows what, but certainly not what he's worth. And that becomes a concern. And we went through that very thing. You know, you fought so long to keep it up there because you knew you had a good team and you knew you were going to get some more chances. And when it was all said and done, it didn't work. And I think that's why you respect so much the New Englands. You respect these teams that are able to get up there and stay up there, even though they're changing people, you know, even though they've still got the quarterback and they've still got the coach. We know that. But still, you know, you look at the receivers and you look at these different people and they're changing, and yet, you know what? They still win year after year.
If you want to, Floyd, I mean, I think you probably could blame the decline of the Titans on the diva wide receiver that played on that team, but it's fine. You can blame it on whatever you want. No, I'm just curious. Like, what does the meeting room look like? Maybe it's tonight when they get back, and it's David Poyle, it's the scouting department, it's Laviolette and his coaching staff. You know, that sort of everything's on the table meeting. What does that look like? What did you guys do? Like physically take us through the process. Do you put every name of a player on there? Do you put every aspect of the team on the table and talk about it? What does that sort of exit reevaluation sound like in that room?
Yeah, it's what will probably happen. I assume they're going to do it similar to what we would do in the NFL, is they'll take a few days and go back through the season and look at, you know, the tape and the games and how so-and-so played. And maybe a guy didn't statistically play up to par, but when you watched him play, he was really playing pretty good. And so, you know, it doesn't carry the same impact as a guy that didn't play well, and then you turn on the tape and he's just not very good. You know, now you're stuck. I think the hardest part of this whole thing is when it gets down to the cap number, you know, and you have to, you know, you look at him and you say, geez, I don't like the way this guy's playing. You know, he's gone downhill for a couple of years now. He's still young and he should be better and he should be this and that and the other, but he's not. And so then you say, okay, well, we need to do something with him. And then you look at the contract and you go, guess what? We can't do anything. You know, I mean, we can trade him for pennies on the dollar, but is that going to help your franchise? You know, you trade him for a fifth and you turn around and draft somebody in the fifth and he's a fifth round player. You know, I mean, that's not going to help you. And so it gets really, really hard. And that's the toughest part, I think. And that's why, you know, that's why it's so important from a trade standpoint, that when you don't want to be a place that when you trade for players, they come in and get worse. For whatever reason, you want to be a place where you trade for players, they come in and they get better, or at least stay where they were. And I think, you know, we experienced a little bit of that this year where some of the guys you traded for came in and weren't really exactly what you wanted them to be. And so, you know, you kind of have to figure out the reason for that.
Floyd, final one for you. I want to get you on one draft question. I saw this yesterday. Multiple NFL scouts tweeting out that Montez Sweat, his stock has bottomed out due to team medicals. People are hearing from a few clubs that have him off a board now. Of course, it only takes one team, but the expectation is now that he will drop, could fall out of round one. So that's a guy at a position of need that the Titans would certainly need. A lot of people thought after the combine, maybe a top 10, top 12 pick. At what point does John Robinson, whether it's 19, trading back to the mid-20s, that second round pick, how do you evaluate a guy when you have medical issues and you look at the value and say, okay, now's the point where, yeah, he's dropping, he's worth taking a flyer on?
Yeah, that becomes a medical issue, you know, and the doctors have to help you with that. Keep in mind that when they go to the combine, they get the best physical they'll ever have in their entire lives. And everybody comes out of that with the same kind of information, because what happens is they'll find an issue. Well, just about every doctor down there will come and take a look at that issue and make an evaluation on it. So, you know, if there's one or two teams that don't like, I think in his case it's a heart, don't like whatever's wrong with the heart, then they may back off. But if the other 30 say, oh, no, that's no problem, you know, we see that all the time, well, then every, you know, those teams will kind of blow it off and you treat them as if there were no issues at all. And generally speaking, a lot of those medical concerns or reasons or you know, just discussions will be the same, because all those guys are looking at the same guy on the same day. And so that, you know, if you're the only team that's okaying him, then you kind of got to, you know, check it out. But if he's been through all those, you know, 32 doctors and 30 out of the 32 say he's okay, then I think you go ahead and take a shot on him.
Floyd, good stuff as always, and I sincerely wish you the best today at 2 o'clock.
It's going to be a try. I'm going to go get a good workout. And
there you go.
Take care of it.
We need a sacker.
There you go.
We need a sacker.
There he is, Floyd Reese. Thank you, Floyd.
Thanks.
Thanks, Floyd.
Floyd might want to take a couple couple of laps around the block before you come in.
I don't know. That might wear him out before having to. You might want to rest. Go take a four-hour nap before 2 o'clock.
Guys, hold on a second. Roman Yossi's calling me. Hold on. Hey, Roman. Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, there's tea times. Yeah. Hermitage today, 1 o'clock. You got it. Wow. Yeah, we'll play the Presidents. That's all right. Good. Thanks, Roman.
Being spirited.
All right, we're going to get back to the Preds next.
So wrong.
615-737-1025. I've got three things that I want to get in as far as what needs to be fixed with the Preds. We'll see if you guys agree. Your call, 737-1025. We're back after this.
What does not need to be fixed in my life is my Xfinity television package. You want more choices and flexibility when it comes to your entertainment? Well, we've got news for you. Xfinity lets you choose from crazy fast internet speeds and pick the types of channels you want. That's right. Xfinity now lets you customize your package and save. So choose a little or choose a lot. You love sports? What about just choosing kids' channels? You can even get access to streaming apps like Netflix and Amazon Prime Video. Sports, kids' channels, Netflix, and Amazon. Xfinity, why do you know everything about my life? Whatever you want, Xfinity has you covered. Get more of what you want and less of what you don't with Xfinity. Now, that's simple, easy, and awesome. Get started with a special offer on Xfinity Internet and TV for just $45 a month for 12 months with a one-year agreement. Plus, add XFi Advantage for enhanced network security, safe browsing, and more. Go to Xfinity.com, call 1-800-XFINITY, or visit a store today. Requires EcoBill and AutoPay. Offer ends 6/21/19. Restrictions apply. New basic TV and performance internet customers only. Equipment, taxes, and fees, including BTV fee extra and subject to change. After term, regular rates apply.
Well, it's disappointing, obviously. We didn't get it done. Yeah, it's tough right now. It's disappointing. We had a chance to win a game six here and go back into our building. And it's disappointing. We didn't get the job done.
That was the captain, Roman Yossi, last night as the Predators lose 2-1 in overtime. Season over after six games in the opening round. And now we break it down. 615-737-1025. We'll take your calls all morning long. Looking back at the game last night, the series, the season, and looking ahead. So I said before the break there was three things that I would do if I was in charge of the Nashville Predators.
And do you think this is healthy to do it like 5 hours after the game's season's over?
It's going to be healthy for me.
You need to get decompression time to reevaluate and take a couple days to evaluate the season?
Nope. No,
going to go right now into
nope.
it?
I slept
hour.
5 hours last night. Feel great.
Even though Floyd just told us this is going to be like a week and a half long process.
That is correct.
All right, let's hear it.
Number one, it is now time to move on from Kevin McCarthy. Longtime Peter Laviolette lieutenant. And when you look at the power play, he's got his hands on it. And he's got his hands on something that has been so inept all season long. There's a man named Phil Housley out there. I'm not saying Housley is exponentially better than Kevin McCarthy, but it is now time to shake things up. I would say, Mr. McCarthy, thank you for your service. We appreciate it. I got to go in a different direction.
Hard to argue with that avenue of approach. I think coaches, as I said yesterday, across all sports, this is not a shot at Lavi at all, but their coaches are loyal to a fault, and he has been extremely loyal, obviously, to Kevin McCarthy. I'm not even saying that Kevin McCarthy has done a bad job over his time here in Nashville, but the defense was exceptional and the power play was great when Phil Housley was here. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying he was directly responsible for all of that, because even Coach McCarthy got the power play removed from him this year, right? He had the power play for most of the year, and then it was removed and given to Dan Muse, and I think they might have changed it back and forth, but whatever they tried didn't work. So, I whether it's adding a fourth coach or whatever it may be, all I know is that 2 years ago when Phil Housley was here, the power play was great and the defense was exceptional. That's the equation in my head.
Okay. So. Number one, there you go. Number two, with the emergence of Dante Fabbro, and I do believe that Dante Fabbro is going to be a stud, I have now five really good blue liners. Now, you might not have seen them, and they might not have actually showed up for this last series, but in theory, on paper, you got five pretty good defensemen. I am moving one of those five for a second-line scorer. I need a top-six guy that can produce, and if I can move one of them for more offense where I have a surplus at one position, I do that.
Well, yeah, you're going to have to. There's something you're going to have to do in the offseason, and I don't think they should wait till, when things start to get ramped up as far
next
as
February.
Trades. Yeah. I think they need to do it in the offseason and get whoever this player is acclimated with the team very quickly. Everybody can't – you would have hoped that you know, the acquisitions that you made during the trade deadline worked out the way that it worked out for Dallas when they got Zuccarello. I put his name and somebody else's name together. Zuccarello.
Mark Zuckerberg.
Yeah.
That's what I thought you Zuccarello. Were saying.
When they went and got Zuccarello, and the guy played phenomenal. And they was looking for that second line scoring, and he ended up being just that for them, their second line scoring. So you would hope that you can get someone that can come in and be immerse themselves in the team very quickly. But it didn't happen this season. So you're going to have to do something in the offseason. So whoever said player is gets an opportunity to get all 82 games with the Nashville Predators rather than get, you know, 40 games in or 30 games in and then try to evaluate the guy.
Yeah, and the fascinating part of that discussion is which one. I mean, Ellis's contract, it could be appealing to some teams or maybe a negative for some teams. I'm not really sure. That's a tough one. P.K. Subban's contract, the problem with Dante Fabbroux and we don't know what he's going to grow into as a player, but he's got tremendous skating ability and some offensive pop. The question is, if you trade P.K., which feels like the name we've all talked about as the most tradable commodity that also brings you the most in return, also a guy who's the oldest of the group, right, and do the most amount of money. So there's sort of boxes that he checks. He's also probably the most physical defender that you have. And if you elevate Fabbroux and you go Yossi, Ellis, Fabbroux, Ekholm as your top four, well, three of those guys are now extremely offensively minded, skilled guys. Whereas even though Ellis is, like, Yossi's a good defender too. I'm not trying to, you know, his number one skill set is his ability to press into the offensive zone. Ekholm becomes sort of your only true defenseman, and maybe I'm wrong on that. Maybe that's part of the equation, maybe it's not.
But do you really think, though, of the four guys that P.K. Subban will yield you the most in return?
I think so, because sort of like how Zion Williamson has to be the number one pick for reasons outside of basketball. There is entertainment value, there's ticket sales, there's this persona, there's a lot of things, and in the right situation.
He has to go to the right team.
Yeah, you're right. If he goes in, and that's why he works in Nashville, right, because it's an entertainment city.
Sure.
If he goes to Vegas, be with his brother, I mean, he will be worth so much more to them than just mm-hmm. the defenseman. So I think that you have to sort of take that extra stuff into account. And to be fair, he has been the best player of the four of them over the course of his career, and he's still only 30 years old. It's not like, again, I still think he has three or four pretty good seasons left in the tank. He is due a lot of money. Ekholm is the easiest contract to trade because he's the best player at the cheapest price, so that's why you don't make that trade. And you're about to re-sign Roman Yossi. He's going into the last year of his contract, so I don't see them trading the captain. So it feels like it comes down to Ellis or P.K. P.K.'s still the one I think you're going to get the by far the most for in return, because you're not going to get that much for Ellis, even if a team does value that contract.
Final one of the three things I would do, I got to trade Kyle Turris.
Mm.
And I don't know if that's just for picks. I don't know if that's for a player. But, I mean, a couple of times last night and throughout the series, he had looks, again, point-blank range, can't score. You know, if he jumped out of an airplane over the Atlantic, I don't know that he would find water.
See, and I disagree with that. I think that play he made down the right wing and then put it far left of the post, I mean, he was inches away from winning that game for them last night. So I think Turris has been actually really good in this series. I don't want that to color my judgment of him from the entire season, because he wasn't that good during the regular season at all, and that's a huge concern. But he was very good in the last week of the season and very good in this series against Dallas. So I saw people on Twitter that were like just ripping him for that shot. That was a really good shot that missed the pipe by an inch on a goaltender who's 6'7" and had been dominant the entire series. So I don't have that concern. Like, Granlund was excellent last night too. That line was phenomenal. He put those two with Grimaldi, actually, and put Grimaldi up on the second line. They were second line, third line, fourth line were not the reasons this team lost this series against Dallas. It's all the other stuff.
Well, I mean, it's been the first line because they really hadn't played up to the caliber of what we were accustomed to seeing that first line play. Arvidsson was a no-show. Yossi and Johansson, Forsberg. I mean, between the three of them, how many goals did they have?
I think they had four.
Four goals.
Four. Yeah, let me double check on that. But I think they had 4 points total, maybe five total.
And after two goals.
Arvidsson had nothing.
Yeah, Arvidsson gave you nothing.
I mean,
and maybe because of the size, and they were just pushing him around, and his size didn't in that respect it didn't work, and that's why I say maybe I don't know.
Secondary scoring was an issue all season. It was not an issue in this series. That's the only thing they got was secondary scoring, right? Austin Watson scores the goal last night.
Okay, do you think, and let's look at it from this standpoint. Okay.
Well, let's do it when we come back.
Okay.
Hold that thought. We'll come back. We'll get your thought on that. We've cleared up the lines. You can get in 615-737-1025. Bob from Antioch will lead us off to kickoff hour two. We'll get Derek's thought. A lot of stuff to get to. Wide open hour in the 7 o'clock hour for you to get involved. 737-1025. We're back after this here on Morning Drive.